welcome back to another episode of Trading Secrets. I'm your host, Jason Tardik, and welcome to the pre-market trading segment where I tell you a little bit about what you can expect from our guest today, one personal finance tip, and one update from my personal life. This week is a perfectly timed episode as we just saw one of the best seasons of The Bachelor, Joey G, come to a finale. Now, we have Colton Underwood, who created scenes and ratings that the franchise had never seen before. Colton has gone through quite the journey, from the highest of highs to the absolute lowest of lows. Colton has seen a lot of it. And in this conversation, you're going to hear us go all the way back to the good old days when Colton and I were best of boys, and some of the funniest behind the scenes stories from when we were on the show to off the show. And you're going to hear all about his business venture through those days to where he is today. So this is an episode you can't afford to miss. Okay, one little personal tip. Well, Talk Money to Me is released this week. So exciting. We have our DC stop today on Monday, April 1st. We then have Philly, April 4th, and then Boston, April 9th. And we are throwing a book wrap party, April 19th. We have 35 free tickets for the book wrap party. All you got to do, buy a copy, send it to me, send me a copy of your receipt. And then what you got to do is just go tag one friend in my post that has the giveaway. And that's how you're entered. Those tickets will be given away soon. All you can eat, all you can drink for a few hours at a cool venue in New York City. Personal finance tip I got for you though, April 15th is around the corner. And so March 15th, that's when business taxes are due. April 15th, personal taxes. And I have partnered up with TurboTax. And something you got to know is that we all know starting a business, it's just not easy, right? And I have faced my fair share of ups and downs since starting my business. From the early days of building it, just navigating operational challenges, even like payroll and all the moving parts of that. And then the struggles, of course, of filing your taxes. It's been a ride. But the game changer that's been for me in my business is TurboTax Live Business. So you get this unlimited year-round advice and answers from an expert who specializes in small business taxes. And they can even completely file for you from start to finish, which is backed by 100% accurate, expert-approved guarantee. So one thing I'd recommend is hand your taxes to TurboTax Live Business today. So you'll have more time to grow your business, focus on that top line. And you could see all those guaranteed details at TurboTax.com/guarantees. Experts only available with Intuit TurboTax Live. That is a game changer. And in my book, Talk Money to Me, you'll hear me talk about all the many personal finance game changers out there. I'll give you another quick one since we're hot right now. Think about how much you spend on an annual basis. If you don't know that number, in my book, I tell you exactly how to find it and calculate it. Multiply that number times 25. That's how much you need to retire. So if you spend $100,000 on an annual basis, multiply that times 25, that's $2.5 million. If you want to live the same lifestyle you do today for up to 30 years, roughly, and obviously it changes for each person, but it's just a rough estimate of what you need to retire, $2.5 million. In my book, I give you a full table of what is your age? What is your household income? This is exactly how much you should have saved at this point. I then give you a table if you're not there, because most of us are not there, how much you'll need to save of your gross income to get there. So that's what you can expect today. Little update from a personal finance tip. And myself, it is a busy week. We got Good Morning America Monday. We have Watch What Happens Live with Andy Cohen on Tuesday. I then have our live show, of course, in Philly. I have it in DC. And there's a few other things happening press-wise this week in New York. But of course, this is the launch week for the book. So it is full court press. If you could please buy a copy of Talk Money to Me on Amazon, Target, Barnes & Nobles, it is $26. It literally will make my day. But enough of me. Let's get into what is an unbelievably entertaining, educational, and extremely insightful episode with Colton Underwood. Also, this is such a different week for Trading Secrets because the first time ever, we have two episodes this week. We have our episode Monday with our main interview. And then on Thursday, Corporate Natalie is coming on to interview me about the book. If we get good response for a second episode, we are going to keep doing two episodes a week. This will be our first try at it. Now, David, the Curious Canadian, is at Nationals with his hockey team in Vegas, competing for the national championship. And unfortunately, he couldn't recap the Colton episode. But what we're going to do is, once he's done this week, we are going to recap not only the Colton episode, but the Natalie episode. And that will be at the end of the Natalie episode Thursday. So we have Colton Underwood Monday on Trading Secrets. And then Thursday, we have Natalie. The other thing I'll tell you is, go into the comments, give us 5-star ratings on Apple or Spotify, and let us know what you think we should call the second episode, should we decide to keep it. Of course, Monday's episode will be Trading Secrets. On Thursday, what I see is a wild card episode. It might be an episode on life. It might be an episode on love. It might be an episode on money. It will be a curveball. Sometimes it will be very intense business stuff where we have more sophisticated stuff. Sometimes it will be founders. Sometimes it will be people from the money mafia that come on and just tell us their story. So think about Thursday like the wild card episode. And I'm trying to think of names for it, like opening the vault, or I don't know. This isn't my forte. So you guys tell me. And if we do pick the title you come up with, we will have a prize for you. So go give us 5 stars. Let us know what the second episode should be called a week. And that will be out this Thursday. Welcome back to another episode of Trading Secrets. Today, we are joined by reality TV personality, activist, entrepreneur, New York Times best-selling author, former professional athlete, producer, and podcast host, Colton Brown Underwood. By the way, I had to cut that list short. There's a whole hell of a lot more, but this guy has done it all. Many of you know Colton from his time spent with Bachelor Nation, having been a contestant on The Bachelorette, Bachelor in Paradise, and being the leading man on season 23 of The Bachelor. In 2021, years after his time as The Bachelor, Colton shared with the world that he was gay and came out. He showcased his trials and tribulations through his own Netflix series, Coming Out Colton. In the years since coming out publicly, Colton met and married his now husband, Jordan, who I got to meet. What a beauty. And the two of them embarked on a journey of becoming parents. He is an advocate for the LGBTQIA community, a philanthropist, and has leveraged his success to give back to matters that have impacted him, his community, and loved ones through the Legacy Foundation. Today, we are going to catch up with Colton and discuss his career journey from The Bachelorette to today and his journey to becoming a daddy through fertility. Colton Underwood, thank you so much for being here on Trading Secrets.
I need you to follow me around and just do that lead as I walk through doors.
That was great. Let's be honest.
I'm ready to run through a brick wall for some introductions here.
I'll be honest. Let's take a trip down memory lane. That's kind of what I did in 2018.
My hype man.
And I was your hype guy, man.
Probably the reason they ended up signing me for Bachelor, even though you were in the running too. You were like on your call with production, probably interviewing and being like, Colton. And I'm like, You were my hype man.
Oh man, it was good stuff. And yeah. I kind of want to talk about some of that stuff because you and I have like sat down, but I don't think we've like really sat down and talked about that time in like, I don't know, either years or forever. And like what just in general, what a wild flashback. Like when I met you, I think you were 25, now 32. Like where the hell did time go?
I know. I think that's what a lot of people forget is like that show. You're like 25 when you're signing up for it. You're at like a weird age. Typically, you don't have a lot of money. Yeah. And also, you're like, don't have a great grasp on who you are and what you want to do. And for me, even more so, just coming out of like football for so many years, like I didn't have a social life. I didn't have like the relationship maturity to even be in a position to be on a show like The Bachelorette, let alone becoming The Bachelor. Yeah. But like, it was a fun time. Like, that's what you're supposed to do shows like that when you're 24, 25, 26.
Yeah.
Like that's the time to say yes to fun opportunities.
Exactly.
But what a ride.
What a ride. I mean, the liability and risk, it's like I was 29 when I did it, but the liability and risk at doing it at 25, 26, that's when you should do it. But like it's much higher because you're still like developing into yourself. But I'll never forget when we got out of the hotel and we were in that lobby. And it was you in my limo. It was Chris, the Harlem Globetrotter. And then Wells, I see you guys. I'm like, I am in deep shit here.
I know.
The small greaseball Buffalo banker. But I want to talk to you before we get into that time, because we have some funny behind the scenes stories I want to talk about and just get your take on it.
Yeah.
As an NFL player. So in 2023, average salary, 860 grand. Percentage of athletes that claim bankruptcy within 5 years of the NFL is actually one of the lowest of all pro sports. It is 15.7%. So I'm curious through your journey, like how, I know you were a practice player. Did you also get signed? What did the financial business side look like of your journey as an NFL player?
Well, to start, So I signed as an undrafted free agent with the Chargers for a signing bonus of $3,000.
Oh my God.
I turned down a 49ers offered me when Harbaugh was there, I think $35,000 signing bonus, which was much higher, obviously. But when I evaluated the roster with my agent, the likelihood of me making that roster was slim to none.
Okay.
And there was an opportunity. My opportunities were better with the Chargers. So that's why I took like an initial pay cut, which ended up paying off because I did stay on practice squad.
Okay.
The first season, I think I was on practice squad. I got cut, signed with Philly for literally a week when Chip Kelly was there.
Oh yeah.
And then returned back to the Chargers and finished out the season on practice squad.
Okay. So as a practice squad player, like in a year, what can you make?
Well, so I think what's important, like when you're an athlete, you only get paid during the season. So like you don't get like this paycheck through like the entire year. It's only when you're actually in season. And it's like for us, I think my weekly paycheck after taxes or something was like close to $5K.
Okay. Gotcha. So
it was like 8,600 or something was like my weekly payment.
Okay.
On practice squad. You make a little over 100,000.
Oh my God. That's practice squad is different than average salary, that number that I just rolled off. But right. I think that the perception is you're in the NFL, you're a millionaire coming into the Bachelor totally. Times. Yeah. And totally. Did you like it from a money perspective? Did you have money going into the NFL? Was everything self-earned? Like what was your relationship with money, like going into the NFL and into the Bachelorette?
I didn't have much. I mean, my parents did really well for themselves. And, you know, I had sort of like an allowance in high school, but the whole thing was, as long as I'm playing sports year round, I never have to get a job. So I played basketball, football, and track. And then I got my allowance. They helped me out, but also like, they didn't pay for college. I was a full scholarship athlete.
Yeah.
So then, and when I was playing football, our stipend was like $850 a month from the football program at Illinois State. So I had that,
okay.
But I didn't have a lot of money. I mean, it wasn't like, and once I hit college, I was independent. So I've been independent since I was 18. So like my parents don't send me money. They didn't send me money in college. Like every once in a while, they'd help with like nutrition or come and take me out. Typical parent stuff, right?
Sure.
And they visit you on campus.
Yeah.
But I didn't have like them writing me checks.
Okay. Interesting. I'll never forget. We had dinner I think it was like maybe when the first episode aired, we had dinner at your place.
Yeah.
And I remember your dad making a comment and he's like, no one, and I mean no one, has done as well or will do as well as my son who still has never had a job in his life. And I'll never forget that comment.
Truly.
It was hilarious. And the dichotomy with your family with that was just,
they still tease me that I don't have a job because the running joke is I asked after, and fast forward a little bit after my Raiders injury, I looked at my dad that we had like a long court settlement. So as soon as like that Raiders settlement hit, I looked at him. I was like, I just need a year off.
How did you get it? What's the settlement about?
I injured my shoulder.
Okay.
There was some misdiagnosis going on.
Okay.
And, we just had like, you know, through arbitration, just had to like go through and reach a, you know, an agreement.
And did that, when you finalized that agreement, did that end your career?
Yeah, I was advised by the Stedman Clinic in Denver that if I got hit in my shoulder in a specific point that I wouldn't be able to lift it over my head anymore.
Oh, geez.
So I ended up getting surgery, getting three scopes done and just like cleaning it up and then just calling it quits.
I wouldn't be doing my job if I didn't ask. Can you share what the settlement was or no?
It's all laid out in your contract. So like how that happens is like when you sign a contract. So I was at that point signing a third year NFL player's contract.
Yeah.
It is allotted for however many games that injury would have had you miss.
Okay, interesting.
And then when you go through an arbitration process like that, I mean, one, it took a year.
Okay.
Even reach a settlement.
Yeah.
And then two, there was just like some discrepancies in
how many
MRI images,
et cetera.
Oh, all sorts of things. I mean, like I took the attitude I should have taken in college. Like I did take in college. I shouldn't have taken it in the NFL.
Okay.
I played while having a broken shoulder.
Oh geez.
They ended up using that against me.
Interesting.
And like, look, he's healthy.
He
practiced.
It. Yeah.
He did it. And I was like, yeah, I did it when you shot me up with cortisone and put three pads on my shoulder and then told me to go play.
The things you don't hear about in the NFL.
Well, I was trying to make it. It was my third year. I was spinning my tires. I was on my third team. I just switched positions to tight end. And I was like, I have a lot to prove.
Yeah.
I can't just sit out in camp when I get hurt.
Yeah.
Should have sat out in camp and got paid. That's what I should have done.
I mean, that's what some of the best guys do. They just sit on the bench and get paid. All right. So give me, let me take a guess. Like was it a six or seven figure amount, the final amount that you...
Six
figure amount. Yeah. Okay. So enough to, at this point, like when you start to cross over into potentially this entertainment space, you get, like, give me an idea of like how much runway you have with cash. Like, are you saying to yourself, I got $1 million. I'm going to give this a shot for 12 months, see what happens. Like, give me the business mindset of Colton there.
Yeah, it was very much, I set an amount and I told my dad, this is the amount that I'm investing in me. And I was like,
how much was it?
And
you can't say I got
$50,000.
Okay, cool.
Said I have $50,000. If this doesn't work, and as soon as I run out of the 50, I'm coming back and I'm getting a sales job.
Wow.
And I actually turned down, the week before I got the approval for Bachelorette, I turned down a dental implant sales position.
Wow.
That was offering me like $300,000. Like, it should have been my career.
And your dad definitely kicked you in the head, right?
Oh, he was the one who like set it up. He helped set it up. It was a friend of his that was running it. And like, I was like, this is it. And I'm like, this doesn't feel right. Like, I want to try this. And I ended up, you know, rolling the dice with my $50,000.
That is wild.
Okay. I'm still rolling my dice and with my $50,000. Yeah,
a few more zeros at the end of that. All right. Let me ask you this though. So before then, you're famously known before The Bachelorette for dating former gymnast Allie. Yeah. Don't want to get into the specifics there, but what I am curious is the business mindset. You go from practice player, you see some of the best players in the world in the locker room making all the millions of dollars, but you are an athlete and that's what you've always been your whole life. When you start dating Allie though, you know, you're going to ESPYs, you're getting a little bit of that like entertainment life. You're getting a little sip of it.
Right.
Was any bit of that like attractive to you? Is that the part that maybe sparked? Cause I've heard you on podcasts say like, I just really like this entertainment industry. Was that maybe part that like sparked it? Or tell me just a little bit about that. Did that change anything trajectory wise?
Not so much the lights, camera, action, but more so like the profession.
Tell me
seeing how that whole group, like Simone and how they all operated and carried themselves as like young athletes and professionals, that was motivating to me.
Okay.
It was really cool to see like, you know, the deals that they were making, the commercials that they were part of, like granted they're they're gymnasts and athletes and like really good at what they do.
Yeah.
But like the way that they handled everything. And also like, by the way, they were like going through one of the most heartbreaking stories in like our entire country.
Right.
That is ever going to be out there, you know,
that, and still performing at that level
and still performing at that level with that pressure.
Oh my God.
So it was just, it was more motivating than I was, than I would say. Like, I remember like even the first picture of like the first red carpet I ever walked, you know, in that situation. And I was way out of my league on multiple fronts, but way out of my league.
Yeah. Okay.
I always end up where I'm not supposed to be. Like I shouldn't have been on that carpet probably either, but like somehow I did.
Yeah. I mean, there is something about like when you get a little glimpse into people that are outliers at that level, run their life, you see a little bit about how much they make and you learn about like their discipline. There's something that's like addicting and attracting to that. You're just like, I want that. I can be that, or I can take little pieces of it and implement it to my life because those are what outliers do. So that happens. How does the actual show find you?
I go through the breakup. It was hard. I was
sure.
Like it was like a weird, it was weird. Like every time I reflect now and after therapy, I reflect after exiting a straight relationship, I went through this, like, do I go back in or do I just like try to come out? Like that's sort of my deal making. I was like, I'm gonna go back in and try it again. And like maybe the next person will make me feel straighter.
Got
it. Like that was sort of my attitude there. I walk into 16th Street Mall in Denver. There's an open casting call for, cause I'd watched the show.
Yeah.
There's an open casting call for Bachelor.
So real quick. Who's
all
your,
these women.
But you watch the show. Who was your favorite lead?
I liked Ben.
Yeah. I mean, who doesn't like,
but I also like Chris Soules. I liked all, like there was a bunch of good ones.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Chris is from, I know he's not. But I was thinking he's from Denver.
Yeah, there's plenty. But
so
anyway,
you walk into it.
I walk into it and like, I'm like looking around. I'm like, am I supposed to be here? And like within a second, they were like, yes, you are. And like had me in front, like I skipped all the lines. I was like, what is going on here?
Yeah.
And they had me in front of a camera and mic'd up in a matter of like minutes. I'm sitting in the chair and they're like, talk to us. And I just like shot the shit with this dude for like 45 minutes. And then like, you know, the next thing I know, there's like emails coming in and like everything's moving forward.
Yeah.
And I'm on a plane to LA.
Unbelievable. All right. So much time has passed. You've had so much success since then. And I think once you've kind of found yourself and you find success in your area, it's easier to be more honest with a question like this. When you signed up for the Bachelorette, it all was the intention to be the lead, like to take this to the top.
Me?
Yeah.
I had no, I wouldn't say that I signed the Bachelorette contract thinking I was going to be at the top.
Okay.
Obviously, as I enter, you enter that house with all these guys, your competitive juices start flowing.
Oh yeah.
Not only for like love, but like then everything starts.
It becomes Survivor.
Right. And that's something like we bonded over too, is this totally. Like, and also why I think like Pete did so well at Traders. Like what I said, so Jordan said to me, and I'm going to get off on a side tangent here because I know you just had Pete on.
Just had Pete on, yeah.
Jordan looked at me and goes, how is Pete so good at this game? And I said, we paused it. And I was like, so here's the thing. He's playing against game players and reality shows. The Bachelor, he was playing game strategy. If I'm at least taking my position.
Yep.
And I think Pete's similar to me.
Yep.
Pete played game strategy against production.
100%.
When you have to
play with and against them. Yeah.
100%. So like,
if you're looking for a styling trading secret, I got one for you. Twillery. They offer stylish, performance-driven suits, shirts, polos, and jeans designed for every aspect of the busy working individual's life. Their clothes are wrinkle resistant with plenty of stretch to keep you comfy. And yes, they're machine washable. Folks love the new Air Suit, which is perfect for spring and summer. Mesh fabric. It's lightweight, so you'll stay cool. They keep selling out, so get them while they're in stock. The long sleeve performance button downs are as comfortable as your favorite t-shirt and looks stylish enough for the office or a date night. So for new customers, just use code JTA18. So it's a new customer offer for all my listeners. It's 18% off $139. Just use code JT18 when you purchase for over $139, 18% off with Twillery.
All these game players, look, I love CT, love Bananas, respect their game. We would run circles around them when it comes to game strategy around a production. Because like you have so many producers trying to produce you, trying to produce the women around you to make this show that you're thinking 12 steps ahead.
Yeah.
So like the fact that like Pete did really well didn't shock me at all.
No, and I think any lead, anybody, this is what my comment was in the recap of that episode. I said, any lead or anybody from that franchise that has figured out a way to entrepreneurial do something after the show as a launch pad in this crazy world would go on any of the, like you see it, Special Forces, Bachelor wins.
Right.
Dancing with the Stars, Bachelor wins. Right. Traders, Peter's the MVP. Like I'm telling you, there's so much
franchise makes beasts.
Yeah.
And it's
it does. I remember, like I have a lot of book smarts. I learned a lot of my street smarts from you. And I'll never forget first night you and I are sitting there and it's like 3 a.m. We still haven't talked to Becca. And I'm panicking. Out. I'm like, dude, like I did not come this far to not get past night one. Yeah. And you're like, I think we're good. You and I strategized, speaking of that, to get one of the producers, I think it was Bill at the time. And we're like, listen, talk to us. Like, what do we, and he goes, you two, you're fine. You know, remember that?
Like, he looked like, at us like, look at you two. Yeah. You're good. He goes,
you're good. We're like, we are? And you're like, you're good. And it was from that point on, I was like, all right, Colton is going to be the guy. We bonded, but also I'm like, you are super smart. And I was like, I got to follow your lead. Then I started to see all this stuff. Like, I'll never forget this as long as I live. Like week two, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe you had a bag from one of your stylists sent to the house. Bro, I had like American Eagle shirts and cap shirts. And I'm like, this guy is a stylist.
I styled the entire
I wore everything you had, even though it was like four sizes too big. My one-on-one date, literally that jacket, by the way, I still have it. It was from your stylist.
At one rose ceremony, I looked at him. I was like, if I go home, there's seven of my suits right now that I'm not getting back.
It's unbelievable.
But yeah, I had a stylist mail me at a certain week more clothes.
How did you get the mansion's address?
Because they only let you take two suitcases. Yeah. And I was like, I need more than this. So I was like, what I'm going to do is I'm going to have my stylist mail a box. Like that's sort of, I was like thinking ahead. I was like, I'll probably be on this show for a while. So I'm going to need more clothes.
Now, in my defense, that was like Buffalo Banker Jason. If I went on a show now, not only would I have a stylist send it, I'd already have brand deals lined up before I went on the show. Right. And you had steps ahead. So like, tell me like the business side of call, like was that part of it? Like I'll get, cause you also remember you had a wine company.
Yeah.
Your wine was sent there too. Like give me like the business side.
Well, the wine was all for my nonprofit, which by the way, like the nonprofit that I set up, you know, people had opinions on that too. I was like, I set that up in Illinois as like a regional charity to support the children's hospital. It was never designed or built to have the infrastructure for like a national foundation. Mm-hmm. So we had a lot of catching up to do right away.
Yeah.
But yeah. And I think like that was great, but I didn't really set up brand deals. I did know that I wanted a stylist. One, because like once you see yourself on a red carpet and you're like, that's not it. You're like,
I need to get help. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I knew that I needed to get help with some looks.
Yeah. Well, you nailed the looks. You nailed the looks. You nailed the game. You nailed the show. And I remember us just being, I kind of be like, dude, I haven't gotten one of these group date roses. And you came back from, I think it was like week 6 or 7. You and I are sitting in and you just got it. You're taking it off in the bathroom. You're like, this isn't good, man. I'm like, what? I'm like, what? You go, I got another group date rose. I was like, yeah, what's the problem, bud? I haven't got one. And I remember you saying like, I don't know, man. Like, I don't think I could do this. Like with her down there, like, I don't think this is my girl. Like, I don't, you were confused in the bathroom, you and I, lights, camera off, just saying like, I don't know what the hell to do.
Because I feel like I'm going to win. I had the whole Tia card too.
But you had the Tia card going into it, but they addressed that week too. You and I sat down, remember that?
Yeah.
But by week 6, you, at least in this moment, thought there was a chance you might end up with Becca, and you're like, shit, I don't know if I'm ready for this. And I always ask myself, was that more like Colton gameplay? Like, I want to make it to the end and be the bachelor. Or was that more like, were you dealing with some of the things that you've dealt with about being straight, being gay? You didn't know if like you were really actually into her. Like what side of that was?
That's a good question. I really don't know. Maybe I think deep down my subconscious always protected me.
Yeah.
So some way, somehow, like it always sort of steered me back to my true and authentic self. However that looked, whether it was disastrous and like not healthy or good for me, or like just like little simple course corrections, right?
Yeah.
And I definitely think there's moments where like that was popping up where I'm like, but I wanted to be straight so bad.
Yeah.
So, like I wanted to, and like, look, I wanted to end up with her.
Yeah.
So then like, maybe this is going to force my hand to get engaged. And once I'm engaged, then maybe I'll feel like this is it.
This is it. Okay. So it's this constant battle. The next thing will give me the clarity.
Correct.
Okay. Okay. So it's a
really toxic approach.
Yeah. Well,
when it's like your survival mechanism and you're as deep in the closet as I already was, just between everything that I had in my life, like there was no turning back.
You had mentioned what Simone and Allie had been dealing with outside of their professional success. I don't know that you would even want to compare the two, but clearly you were dealing with a lot mentally. But it's interesting, you were still having so much success in everything you did, even the batch, all the things you did. Is there something there about the way you protected and safeguarded, like you put the wall up so almost all your focus was only on work? Because it feels from the outside, you had so much success while you were dealing, especially during this 2018-19 timeframe, while you were dealing with so much internal disarray.
Mm. Yeah. That's definitely accurate. I think that I definitely compartmentalized a lot of my life. Mm-hmm. But the one thing that always was a through was my work and how I approach things. And like, I've said this a couple of times, but like I was never the most athletic, never the most talented, but I always worked the hardest.
Yeah.
And like, even if I'm not the best or most talented in the room, I'll still find a way to get the job because like I'll work harder than the people around me.
Yeah.
That was sort of just my attitude and how I took it. But I actually went, I'm not a woo-woo guy.
Yeah. Okay.
I went to an energy healer.
Okay. Like recently?
Recently.
Okay.
And here's what happened. I sort of told him some stuff that was going on and he looked at me and goes, "You have daddy issues." Huh. Not in the way that like it gets thrown around.
Yeah.
Like daddy issues.
Yeah.
He goes, "You grew up in the Catholic Church. Say the Lord's Prayer." And I said, "Our Father." And he goes, "Stop, Father." I was like, "Okay." And he goes, "You have learned your entire life that Father is Almighty. And Father does not just represent your dad. It represents your coaches, the producers, all these people. So anytime you face conflict, you know not to fight against Father. So your body has always been in a constant state of when it enters fight or flight to fly. So you're always on to the next thing. You never confront your father. So you never confront authority. You never go against who that is. So you're in a constant. So like, it makes sense that like, once I was done with the Bachelor franchise, I just turned my back on it, burned it down, like we're trying to get out of it and just flew on to the next thing.
Yeah.
That's sort of been the story of my life with like NFL, with that, like I'm just on to the next and I'm always in a state of flight.
Interesting.
I just thought it was such a great perspective. Like whether it was accurate or not, like, I don't know. It helped me.
Yeah.
It felt cool to do.
Yeah.
And I think there was something there.
Well, I think that even ties into the question I asked, which is like when faced with some of those predicaments, you just kept flying and your flying was, you know, get your rose, do your thing, like be right. The best. You're the best on the
next,
show.
I'm always on to the next step.
One. Yeah. On to the next one.
Yeah.
One of the things though, okay, I'm going to dig even a little deeper there. Cause one of the things that I was like, I would always take from you cause I learned it from you was you were so good with production and the higher ups. You were like the best. You were the most beloved and loved. But you're also good at like finding different things out. Do you remember when we were, I'll never forget, we would go to the treadmills to work out.
Oh yeah.
And then you figured out how it was connected to the internet and you were able to look up like things that we needed to know. Yeah. I took that. And in hometowns, I did that like four times. Yeah. Like I was like getting emails from people like, run. I mean, that's
the old ellipticals and treadmills, you know, had the Twitter you can log
the
into.
The Twitter.
And I was like messaging my family from and my
NASA,
Twitter account.
You were like hitting your family up. I'm like, yeah. Dude, you see anything? You're like, I don't know.
I ended up getting caught too.
Like, yeah, Bill, I remember you got Bill,
they like
by
flagged
that.
It to production.
Yeah. But you know what?
I was a little
the
rebel.
Rest is history. Yeah. I got a question for you that relates to my book Talk Money to Me. I talk about contracts all the time.
Yeah.
I could be right. I could be wrong. You could say pastor if you don't want to deal with this.
Right.
But my understanding was, and I think it's one of the smartest moves I've ever heard anyone make in any contract. My understanding is that in the contract, there's some type of liability risk of which you could be sued up to. And you got an insurance protection. So if you're sued up to that amount, you had insurance. So you were covered.
Yeah.
True, false, pass.
True.
Okay.
I have multiple policies and ways to protect myself through an umbrella, through life, through so many different things.
Do you think that strategy connects to exactly what you just said about like the fatherhood, like they're like protection
against totally.
The fatherhood. So like you were always in defense of the people at the top that had the control.
I think there was a mix of that. And I also think there's a mix of like, there was a legitimate, most of the time, if production ever sues talent, mm-hmm. they know that they're going to win.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
My guess is the reason why they never like really, really pursued me is because I had a good stable of lawyers ready to go.
Yeah.
And like, they just knew that like I was at least savvy enough to figure it out.
Yeah.
I had loopholes. I mean, that was like, like I said, I was never always the most talented.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have been in many situations that I've been in, but I always put myself in the best position possible once I was there to like succeed or have, you know, do a good job.
Yeah. And there's I've learned so many business lessons for you that I continue to carry forward. One of the biggest ones was, and we've talked about it, and I think you've talked about it, I've heard you talk about it on podcast too, is when we were interviewed for The Bachelor.
Yeah.
So me, you, and Blake are interviewed. And I remember exactly what I did. I went in there. I'm going to tell them everything they want to hear. I'm going to be the boring vanilla guy. I'm here for love. Da, 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 right?
Yeah.
And I'll never forget when you told them, listen, Blake and Jason, I'd want to grab a beer with them too. You want a good show? I'm your guy. There is so much that people back home can listen to and learn from that, because when you're interviewing for a job, when you are, if someone's selling medical devices, like a job you almost took, insurance, you have to know the people that you're talking to. You have to know how to create value for them and stop trying to be something you think they want to be,
right.
But be the best version of yourself at that time for the value they need to hear. Yeah. All those people there, they didn't give a shit if I wanted to be married and happy with kids. They need a good TV show.
Yeah.
And like, I wanted to see.
They needed a $70 million profit.
They needed.
That's what they wanted.
Was that part of the thing they said?
No, I mean, I don't know what the exact numbers were. I knew it did really, my season did really well for them profitability wise, but look, you're walking into Fleiss's door to his office.
Yeah.
By the way, I don't know if you paid attention when you walked through it or if you were just nervous and didn't. He had that door custom made, flew in.
Wait, really?
You never noticed his door?
Dude, see, this is why I want to hang out with you all the time. You know everything.
You can't walk like this man's like office and just like how he presents himself. I mean, you guys get a glimpse of him on Twitter. I walked into that meeting and like kicked my shoes off and threw my feet on his desk. And I'm like, let's go.
Wait, that's what he did to me. When I walked in, he kicked his sandal. He wore his sandals.
Well, that's the problem. You let him do it. You didn't do it.
See, dude, I'm still learning from you all these years later.
It wasn't, and it wasn't exactly like that. Yeah, the glasses
you can't see through, yeah, and his vape. And he didn't look, he didn't look at me once.
I think there was a part of me that thought, like, because he was a big Chargers fan too. Immediately I'm like, yo, did you call Telesco, the GM? Yeah. And I was like, what he said, like, is he excited for me?
Yeah.
Something like that. Like, we were shooting the shit off that. Alon and Bennett were there. It just was like, and it was very much like this on the couch, chilling, just being like, let's do this.
Yeah.
It didn't feel like a business meeting. It didn't feel like an interview.
Yeah.
It was just sort of like a fun, like, I'm going to go like walk into this dude's office and be like, let's go.
Yeah. I was scared shitless, nervous. And I think they're probably the most boring guy ever. All right. But I want to bring this back to the listening base.
Yeah, yeah.
You're very skilled at that. Obviously you're observant, and even seeing the door, you kind of mirror his behavior. For people back home that don't have that confidence or don't even know how to prepare for stuff like that, what is some advice you'd give them, whether it's an interview, it's a sales pitch, maybe it's even a date, like some of those things to be like, no, I am going to be here and I'm going to do my best so they see the best version of me.
Well, there's this saying called, and it goes like, fake it till you make it.
Yeah.
I don't like that exactly, because like it catches up to you. I mean, like, look, it caught up with me at one point too, because like I was trying to be somebody I wasn't.
Sure.
But always trying your hardest and like preparing as much as you can, and just like also having like the self-awareness to know what your weaknesses are.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there, I didn't have, you know, the smoothness that maybe you did, or like the authenticity that sort of Blake had. And you guys, I was never trying to be Jason or Blake when I entered that room.
Yeah.
I was just like, this is what I'm good at. This is like who I am. So I leaned into that. So I think it's like not so much of like fake it till you make it, but it's like really just like what makes you good. And hyper focus on that and bring that to the table, because like, that's what got you into this position in the first place.
Yeah. I love, like, so finding what differentiates you and just lay into that.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
lay,
yeah,
and, yeah. And obviously a lot.
I have to find a picture of this door to show you.
I got
to
see the door.
They even did an article on it. I want to say
the door. I remember, like, I could paint you the entire, cause I think when you have these, like, I don't want to say trigger moments, but these like really important moments of your life that are just so outlined.
Like,
you always remember. I remember the door. But I would never remember it was special. That office,
it was like something. I don't want to misspeak.
Yeah.
I'm almost 90% sure it was the door. Might have been the desk. There was one. All I know is like there was something so crazy that I asked one of the producers, like, "What is the deal with this?" And like he had it flown in, something like to that extent. I was like, "Okay, like this man means business. So like, let's do it."
There's things to take away from that. That is good stuff.
Yeah.
The other thing too, I got to bring up, because you and I talked about in Savannah Chrisley's podcast, you and I were buddies after the show. Becca Tilly was doing a non-for-profit. I don't know if you remember this. She was doing like a non-for-profit. It was like a can. She was like fundraising for like getting cans and giving them back to like one of the food shelters. And you're like, we got to go. I think you said at the time you had a crush on Becca. I was like, all right, let's go. We stayed at my brother's place. Now, you know, my brother's gay and married. You left that weekend and he was like, you know, he's gay, right? And I was like, wait, you know, they're about Colton? And my brother's like, yeah. And I was like, no, he's not. And he's like, yeah, he is. And I'm like, no, I'm just like, okay, my brother's doing like brother things. Do you like, did you know you were gay at that point? Were you certain? Were you still fighting it? Like, and then it's like Gator. I'm like, how did he know that?
Oh, gay men terrified me when I was in the closet.
Why? Because they could just like see right to it.
Yeah. I mean, yes, that. And I think there was like, obviously there would be emotions that would come up within me when I saw somebody living an out life.
Yeah.
That I'd be like, oh, I can never have that. Whatever however those emotions presented themselves.
Yeah.
I always knew, but I also like thought that there was a pathway for me to just become straight. Like I bought that version of like, you know, all the way from like print, trying to pray and end it with like, I don't want to be gay. Like there's so many things that I leaned into.
Yeah.
But yeah. Gay men scared me. I would say I knew, and it's sort of LOL now with Becca coming out and finding her love and happiness too. I'm like, oh, we could have had like an arrangement in our straight, in our straight life.
That's interesting. All right. Well, thank you for sharing that. And Steve, you were right. You nailed it. All right. So you go on The Bachelor. We know that spoiler. I'll still never forget me, you, Blake. We're all on one group text. They tell us Labor Day. We're going to call one of you guys tomorrow and you will be the guy. They call you. you. You're the guy. You have a great season. Yep. Ratings off the charts. Let's fast forward through Bachelor stuff, but let's talk about a little bit of business after the Bachelor. Yeah. You were very intelligent with how you navigate your business. You know, you were one of the only Bachelors that were able to turn a book at the speed you did after your season and become a New York Times bestseller, selling probably, if I had to guess, the most units of books ever been sold from a former Bachelor. Yeah. And I think even with like your branding strategy and brand deals, monetization, you did it differently, but I've never got a glimpse into that. So whatever you're comfortable with sharing, like how much did you make compared to the NFL? What was part of your strategy? Tell me about the business side of Colton when the show's over and you have all that momentum.
Yeah. I mean, look, I think I shared you with some numbers. Like I made 100X plus what I made in the NFL, like off of
that. You were making millions off when you finished the show.
Yeah. But I also like the reason why I think there was a lot of tension between me and The Bachelor was never, there was some on camera. They gave me like, look, I hate even saying it gave me the edit because like you're the one who's in front of camera. Like you can, it's really hard to edit somebody to look really, really bad when they did really, like when they were authentic and like who they were and how they handled things.
Yeah.
I never had like beef with that. There were some things behind the scenes that happened. And then also just like contractually, I would never sign that Bachelor contract again. I mean, you got the same one, so you knew too. Like there's a tail on it and like they get to approve some of your deals. Like I bet I left north of 4 or 5 million on the table because of my contract. The one that really ticked me off was I was in talks with Halo Top.
Oh yeah. Ice cream. Yeah. Nick and did that.
You see where I'm going with this.
I see.
I was in talks with them to do social media campaign and possibly like a commercial with it. And my agent was negotiating it. We were in talks and like we submitted it to ABC for approval.
Okay.
All of a sudden it goes cold on my agent's end. And like we followed up and they're like, hey, we're actually going to go in a different direction. Like, so weird. Like they had like the deliverables, they had the contract, they had the price, they had all this game plan. And then all of a sudden they're like going in a different direction. I get to my finale of my season. Like, hey, like we want like the shower scenes were a big hit for everybody. It's like, hey, we want to like shower, like film a mock shower scene.
Yeah. We have Ken, the Barbie doll. We're doing this.
I'm in the green room at like the live stage and I'm hopping in the shower. I have camera. I'm like faking my shower and they're like, hey, hold this. I'm like, they're like, what? And he handed me a Halo Top. And immediately I got hot and I was like, this is where the deal went. And they product integrated into my finale with Halo Top. And then they booked Nick to do the commercial. So that ABC, like, obviously, look,
they're smart.
That's in the contract. Yeah. I signed it. I shouldn't be mad. I'm not mad at like them.
You feel like you got out. They
made the money that I was supposed to make. But then they product integrated it and then used my likeness because they could, because they had the green light in my contract.
And honestly, at this point, like while it ticks you off from a business leadership,
I'm like genius.
Touche. Yeah. All right. But you move on. You're making a ton of money. Things are going well. I don't want to get into the specifics of everything, but you have your rock bottom moment.
Yes.
You've talked about it. You've taken accountability for it and all that happens. Does that, and you've talked about the mental aspect of that as well.
Yep.
I also have to imagine a lot of this stuff with NIL is connected to like credibility, likeness, and like what's happening. How bad does a setback of that nature impact your business and like just even the monetization and like income flow? It's I would imagine that has a huge impact, of course, mentally first, but also from a business perspective too.
I wasn't at that point. I was doing well enough to be mainly just concerned for my life.
Okay. Like
just speaking transparently.
So much, like, it's just so much deeper than
you. Have that type of experience that I had, like that was really, really bad.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just, there was one night in particular that was like the worst.
Yeah.
But it was going on a few weeks of just like really, really abusive medication that I was like abusing my medication to a point where it's like, was not healthy. And like, I wasn't in my right mind to do anything. So once you have the perspective of like your life, it just like, I truly wasn't worried about money. And also like at that point I'd left LA, I went and moved back in with my dad. I gave him my medications. I was seeing a psychologist and a therapist 2 times a week. Like I was like fighting for my life of like just basically being like, I have to figure this out. even when I was doing that, I didn't even come out. Like, wow. Like when I asked for help, even from that psychologist and that therapist, I didn't get, like, I didn't tell them what was going on.
Wow. So people back home, if they're hitting rock bottom, or they've hit rock bottom in a standpoint that people still label or characterize for something that happened, and they need to work on growing and changing, so they're not that person, whether it's professionally, financially, or personally.
Yeah.
Being there and having done it yourself and grown from it and have become the man you are today, what advice would you have for those people?
Even if you feel like you don't have a support system, lean on like that one person that you think might be there for you.
Okay.
Just like having that faith that you have somebody to support, even though, like, I know even in my darkest times, I was like, I don't have any support system in this. I can never do this. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't have that team. I don't have that support. You do, you just don't understand it. And there's like this mental block. So like, as soon as I sort of worked up the courage, I told my publicist first, because he was dealing with like photos and stuff. And then I dealt with my professional team. Uh-huh. I had to tell them.
Yeah.
And then I came out to my family.
Yeah.
And it just was like, really, it was like, you get the confidence after you tell like the first couple people.
Yeah.
But it was a slow crawl back out. I'll say that.
Yeah.
And then like, once I got out, I got kicked again. And then I'm, you know, sure. So it's like, it was tough.
And the thing I'm hearing, and tell me if I'm hearing this right, but it's like, in that darkest, deepest, worst place of your life, like, just find the smallest step forward and like, get off that momentum, and then another step will come. But there is that step forward. There's someone you can step on to get that step. Just find it. That's what I'm hearing. It's kind of what
I'm hearing. You're not going to step into the light immediately.
Yeah.
You're going to get closer to the light.
Yeah.
And that's like your goal every day should just to be, to like make that little hole, that light at the end of the tunnel, a little bit bigger.
Yeah.
A little bit bigger. And then as soon as like you get to the point where you're finally feeling, you know, better, hopefully you're out and you're in that light.
Okay. And speaking of light, you got to that light, and then you were able to actually create a show through Netflix coming out, Colton, which is very supportive of the LGBTQIA community. Yep. And a question I have for you there is, with that, you had to really put some of your darkest times on blast after you're just come out of it and put it into a show. What was like the personal and the business balance and the decision of doing that?
Well, I just had to work through how I was going to own it. Like, at this point, I've ran from it for 28, 29 years of my life.
Yeah.
And I had on multiple occasions said I'm not gay and or alluded to my, I mean, even in my book, I like had a sentence in there saying like, I am not gay. Like, I addressed my sexuality in my book when I'd, you know, probably shouldn't have. And the backstory there though was like that production company was already in talks with me for another project in which I took, when I took my mental health break and like moved back in my crisis, and I sort of backed out of, but it was led by two gay men who sort of knew enough to know what was going on. Similar to your brother.
Okay.
They were like, okay, we have an idea. Yeah. But then like I dropped out and like, was like, I can't do this project anymore. And then they reapproached me. And we're like, let's, you know, next time you're in LA, let's grab coffee. So we grab coffee, and they basically alluded to it. And I came out to them. I said, this is what I've been going through.
Sure.
Like, I don't know what to do right now. I don't know what's next. I don't know like what I have to do. And they're like, we'll get right back to you. And then like, and they were like, Netflix wants to talk to you. So like, once I talked to Netflix, everything was like in like immediately in, you know, going.
Yeah.
But there was a lot that we had to sort of sort through just because I had so much distrust of like reality TV.
Oh, of course. Yeah. So, but personally, I want to hear the personal reason you do it.
Yep.
Because you're like, I had a story. Let's tell the story. Let's do it in a fashion which it can make as much impact. Is that the personal side of doing
it? No, the personal side was because it held me accountable to have those conversations.
Interesting. It forced you to do it.
Yeah, because I know like in this scene, I'm coming out to my dad. In this scene, I'm coming out to my mom. It forced my hand to actually come out on camera.
Interesting.
Because then like I had a crew, I had a schedule. It was like, call it whatever you want. People's coming out experiences are different.
Yeah.
I knew like it helped in my coming out experience to know that, like, in a certain scene, I was coming out to my dad and I had to have this conversation.
Right. And it's like things like that, when you step into it, it accelerates getting to your place of happiness where you're at now. Yeah. We're going to get to that in just a minute. Talk to me about the business side of the show. Like, when you do a Netflix show, can you own rights to it? Is it just a talent fee? Like, how does business of doing a show that's your own on Netflix work?
Well, I told you earlier, I would never sign the same contract that I signed as a bachelor. And I took that into that. And okay, I didn't sign the same contract. Fair. I was an executive producer on the show. And that was like one of the main things at the very beginning before we even engaged was just like, this is my life, my story. Like, I've been through a lot. Like, let's do this together. And I will say, to their credit, it was one of the best experiences in my professional career.
On just from like the process or like the
whole Netflix team,
just everything.
Money, no.
Okay.
I think like,
so it's not a money play.
Something I could comfortably say is you take a haircut on the finances when you go to Netflix.
Okay. Okay.
And like, I understood that.
Okay.
Like, their reach is greater than any other streaming service that like they don't have to offer you the top dollars. Like, and once again, people don't get excited about $100,000 that comes with The Bachelor. They get excited about like after, like, obviously they have a chance to find love. And then also they have all these fun, crazy, cool experiences.
We talked about, I'm pretty sure you and I both talked about doing reverse negotiating. At least I did. I was like, I didn't do it, but I was really considering because the offers of $100,000. We have talked about that a lot. And I said, I was going to say, don't pay me anything because the value of that screen time and everything is millions. Like, who cares about $100,000?
Right.
Right. So your thought process was Netflix, take a haircut on what payment comes in. I'm going to make an impact. I'm going to be forced to come out to the people I love. And on top of it, it's going to be, I'm an executive producer.
Yeah. Well, I mean, once again, the content of that show, it was like, me coming, I wasn't really thinking about the money. I had the understanding of I had to get out of like this hole personally that I was in of like owning my shit for the first time and also like reintroducing myself in public and be like, this is who I am. This is why I did what I did. This is what my process was. And like, this is me. Like in a way that like I was still figuring it out as we were filming.
Wow. So interesting.
Yeah.
Well, if you are a freelancer or you're a business owner, listen up. You might not be structured correctly, but there is a group out there called Collective. They specialize in S-Corps, a tax election that saves its members on average $10,000 per year. So if your business is making at least $60,000 in profit annually, then you could be missing out on thousands in tax savings every year. The earlier you elect in 2024, the more money you could be putting back in your pocket. They're experts will help focus on accounting and bookkeeping and also your tax election. So if you are a freelancer, you own a small business, listen up. This is for you. Most people also overpay during tax time, so Collective can help you with that too. For a limited time, Collective is waiving the onboarding fee when you just go to collective.com/trading secrets. Tell them Trading Secrets sent you. That's $199 value for free when you go to collective.com/trading secrets and tell them Trading Secrets sent you. That's collective.com/trading secrets and tell them Trading Secrets sent you.
Up until that point, you have probably the most wild track and wild resume of anybody that touches reality TV, from your story as an NFL player through the Bachelor franchise to your coming out Colton on Netflix. And you have built a celebrity status and a brand that is unlike anybody that's ever come in the 20 years from the franchise. So I'm going to get into Jordan and your fertility story now, and I'm excited about that. But I want to make sure I address this business-wise. Where do you go? Like, you got your own Netflix show. You were one of the best bachelors of all time. Ratings were off the charts. You're making your millions at this point. You had a huge, huge growing pain you learned from, overcame, took ownership, and are a new person. Where do you think, like, more reality TV? Do you go into acting? Do you get into ownership? What's like the business process from this point on?
The thing that I was just talking to somebody, and at the end of the day, if I had like use words to describe me, it would be like storyteller. And the first story that I had to tell was my own. So once that's now out of the way, I have an opportunity now to like tell other stories. And that's sort of what I'm doing with my production company, is working with other humans out there and just doing different unscripted shows. I have a scripted project. I have a documentary that I've been, you know, producing and developing.
Wow.
So there's a handful of things that I have and I'm building on the back end. Just cause like, you know, my Netflix show wasn't the most well received right when it first got announced. There was obviously some blips and people had opinions and everything. And I remember, you know, people were calling for me to like donate my talent fee. And I was like, I don't even know if I'm in like the top 100 paid off of this project. And you're asking me to make this contribution. Like, you know, I think that it's just, you know, there's so much more to be done on the back end.
Yeah.
That excites me just from a creative standpoint and also just longevity in this career.
So
like, I'm not going to go back on, like, I can't ever at this point go back on like a reality type format. Like I just, it wouldn't feel right.
Like even like a competition show.
Oh,
like
I would do competition shows.
Okay. So you would every do that. Yeah. Okay. Gotcha.
I'll always be a competitor.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So like that. Yeah. And I don't like to speak in definitives either because like people like to hold you to whatever you say. So it's like, if I say I'll never do that, it's like, something's going to
People shouldn't hold definitive after learning this through therapy. You shouldn't hold people to absolutes because that's suggesting that
people change.
People change.
Yeah.
People grow.
So anyway, I would definitely do competition shows. So I'm having fun and I'm enjoying building shows right now. And I'm enjoying telling other people's stories. I'm enjoying the experience that I have and like helping other people through it.
Yeah.
Like I made a lot of mistakes in my entertainment career so far, and I've only been in it for a few years.
Yeah.
But like, I'm going to try to put my best foot forward.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Yeah. Well, so I'm going to play devil's advocate. I'm going to defend the producers a little bit. So now the idea is you were the main character.
Right.
You worked with producers and now you're going to go into production. Mm-hmm. How does that make you feel? Like, do you have any bit of like, do you find any bit of like, okay, wait, there's a little hypocrisy. I'm dogging on these producers, but now I'm a producer, or are you taking a different angle? Like, tell me about that.
So, well, one thing we're doing different is, all of our unscripted content that we make, the talent gets free therapy for a year after the show. I think that just stems from my own personal stuff. I needed help. I didn't get it. I didn't have access to it. I didn't, you know, I was sort of shamed when it came to it in a way.
Yeah.
Anytime I wanted to talk to the therapist, like, why don't you go sit in for a confessional? I'm like, no, not the same thing.
I need a professional.
So that's one change that I'm making that I think should be standard in most production agreements now, because like you're blowing these people's lives up. Yeah. In many ways.
Yeah.
Like you're making them rich. Good, you're making them famous, but then also you're giving them anxiety, depression. Like you're setting them up for bad habits if you don't protect them.
Yeah.
So that's one thing we're doing. And then two,
that's cool.
I'm just really working right now. My goal, and like, if I had like a saying, like summary of like what As Best Friend Productions is, it is bridging our country, the content that we put out. I'm trying to unify and be positive and uplifting, but also introducing new characters to people in towns that might not have that exposure.
Wow.
So there's a lot of towns out there and a lot of different states that are cultural deserts.
Oh yeah.
So like they don't see a Black person. They don't see a queer person. They don't know what it means to be transgender or gay, or they don't have that representation.
Right.
But when they turn on a show, they have an opportunity. And so for me, it's like, how do we do this in a way that feels like they can understand that character and what they're going through?
Yeah.
So
it's really cool how you're using experiences to now be behind the camera, produce things that are impactful to visibility people need to see.
Yeah.
And tying it back to the podcast, Trading Secrets, I'm making an assumption, but I have to assume when you're on the production side and you own the shows, the upside's got to be massive. Right?
Yeah. Way more like than the talent fee.
That's what I'm saying. Like, so there's also, so you're doing all these things that like are great and there's change that has to happen, but it also is a hell of a business plan too.
Well, hell of a business plan. And you don't have to have the stress that comes with being on TV anymore. Yeah. Like, I think people are like, oh, how fun was that? I'm like, yeah, the anxiety that I had every Monday night when I turned that show on, not knowing what I said or what the mics picked up or what was caught.
Yeah.
Like, they don't give you screen. Like they give you as the lead, they give you a couple screeners here and there.
Yeah. And the feedback like that, that was one thing, like just like the comments, the DMs, like you're not prepared for like a tidal wave of either good or bad to just come at your plate and it totally in all different ways messes you up. So
it definitely, and the longevity, like people, you know, people who still are like, you're 15 minutes of fame. It's like, I've been doing this for a few years now. Like it's not, and I like, I'm not seeking that. Yeah. Like I do want to have long, I love the entertainment business.
Yeah. It is so much
fun. It's like a hustle. It's a grind. It's like
nothing moves. Like you talk about selling, like you almost did devices like that. There's a high of selling the device going into the surgery.
It's sales. There you're selling yourself.
Yeah. There is no high like the entertainment industry right. and the speed at which it goes.
Right.
But the speed at which it goes away. Like it's right. this, it's just a, if you're a game player, yeah. it's a wild game.
Right. See, that's some of my problem with some of the people from reality and our, even our franchises, yeah. they get that. So what they do is they start their podcast, mm-hmm. they go on their red carpets and yep. they run their mouth
yep.
saying things that they actually don't really believe.
Yep.
And, or as soon as they get off that red carpet are going to text that person and be like, so sorry, I did this. And yep. it's like, they're playing that game.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, what?
Yeah.
Why are you doing? Like, what yeah. are you doing?
You're like, I am the game. You're like, I have
to deal with this now.
Yeah, I have to do this. So. And I will take ownership. I fell for that once with Colton.
There was a few.
We had a talk. And I think it was once or twice.
No, not you.
No, like, but I'm just saying a few people. I did once.
Yeah.
I did once. I said something I shouldn't have said in an interview when I was asked. It was about our relationship. I was triggered because we weren't friends anymore. And Colton and I had to have a heart to heart. So I usually don't typically.
Yeah, no.
That.
Like that was, but
that's not
while we're thing. On this, while yeah. we're on this, there's, you know, that was like the one thing as I was working through this is the dog pile mentality is a very real thing. And yeah. I think it's easy for people just to like, when they see somebody down, it's easy to just jump on the dog pile and like kick them while they're down totally. And, or just it's easy clickbait. It's easy, yeah. whatever you want to call it. But like there was a lot that like, there is always, and I have such an appreciation now for people who are going through a hard time.
Yeah.
Because like, I'm sure there's shit in the media right now with you and
oh, yeah, yeah.
like that is not true.
Yeah. Oh,
and
yeah.
you're like, do I fight this? Do I own it? Do I own part of it? Do I not fight? Like you have to make so many decisions. That's why like, even like the comments, like I have to be calculated in my life.
Yeah.
If I'm not, I'm going to be hurt.
Yeah.
So like you have to calculate a certain degree to prepare yourself, to protect yourself too.
Yeah.
Like the reason why I'm calculated is because I have to protect my mind. I have to protect my body. I have to protect who I am.
Totally.
So like that's why I'll always go to bat and say like, fair statement.
Yeah.
But it's not for the reasons that like maybe most of the public thought.
Or, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I also think, you know, ever since I said that comment, I always took it back because I think calculated has such a negative connotation and I've been called right. calculated often, but sometimes, like you said, calculated is literally just the process of like, I don't know, trying to defend and like create a safe place for yourself, right? Like sometimes yeah. it's just creating safety,
right?
It's not the intent to hurt others or do anything else. It's just literally creating safety.
Yeah.
And so there's something there.
And a game plan.
And a game yeah. plan. Yeah. I also know, as real quick, I'll say this and then I want to quickly get to your fertility because I know your time is limited here. But the idea, I think a lot of people come off the show and then, or any show, and they get this quick hit of fame and they lose sight of who they are and where they were 6 months ago. And yeah. they think they're the next George Clooney, Leonardo DiCaprio. And then they don't want to like put in the work or do the things you have to do. And then they create this yeah. ego. And then 6 months later, it's all gone and nothing's there. Like that's a real common thing too. So yeah. this space is a wild space. We talk about it often on this podcast, but it's always interesting to hear from you, Colt. But Colt, you have a new journey in your life on top of now being a owner of a production company. I can't wait to see some of your work. But I had read that you have worked with a 9-person medical team, lawyers, an egg donor, and a surrogate to go through the whole process of fertility to now become full circle, the father, the yeah. figure that you have worked so hard to understand, get to know, and now fill into that role and maybe do things differently for your son or daughter. Talk to me a little bit about this process. When I was reading 9-person medical team, lawyers, egg donor, and surrogate, this, I'm just like, time and money.
I mean, more now. Every week, you know, there's a new extension or person added into it. So
go through the. I assume step one, get your sperm yeah. tested to see if the sperm is healthy. Is that correct?
Yeah, everybody. And I'm a big advocate for this. Right now, when the word IVF comes up,
yeah,
you think of it as last resort.
Yes.
Or, oh, shit. Oh, they had to do IVF.
Yeah, they're going through IVF.
How I challenge people is IVF should be viewed as preventative medicine. Testing your sperm, you should do at 20. You should freeze your sperm at 20. You don't know what's going to happen. Like our military freezes our sperm.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
Like there's a lot of people who are at risk and or doing certain jobs that have to freeze their sperm.
Oh my God. I want to go freeze my, I got my sperm tested recently. Numbers were great. I was thrilled about, but I should freeze my sperm.
Freeze your sperm. I would advocate all of the men out there that want to be fathers.
Okay.
Get your sperm tested. If the numbers are good and or great, freeze it. You can always like come back. Like you don't know what's going to happen in your life. Like, and I mean this all the way down to like, you know, what just happened in Alabama with the IVF ruling.
Yeah.
What people don't realize is anybody who battles cancer, childhood cancer, they have to have their eggs taken out and frozen. They have to like going through radiation and chemo sterilizes you. Wow. So like there are other health factors that go into it. My case and what, like why I struggled with my sperm was through testosterone and other lifestyle activities that I was partaking in.
Yeah.
But I'm a huge, huge, huge advocate for freezing your sperm. There's an at-home, not to like plug anybody, but there's an at-home sperm testing kit called Legacy Sperm. That's great.
Okay.
So easy.
Okay.
Like in, out, boom, done.
How much
like,
does it cost to freeze your sperm?
A couple $100.
Okay. Okay. So it's, but like, it's affordable to do.
Once again, pretty affordable.
Okay.
You can't put a price tag on your kids.
You can't. Yeah.
That's just like, it's, find a way to make it work. Life. That's what I tell you is like, we have to find a way to make it work.
Okay. So you go through the process. You suggest everyone gets their sperm frozen. You find out your sperm from testosterone and other stuff has some issues. What are some things, like how long is the process to get your sperm back to where it should be?
6 months.
6 months. And then I'm sure a whole medical.
Yeah. Process. So when I got my results, Jordan got his and it was 55 million, something like that. Of like just a ton of sperm.
Yeah.
And I get mine in like four. Three of them are dead.
You're like, what the hell?
I like looked at it. I was like, excuse me?
Yeah.
And he like moved on to the next topic. And I was like, oh, we got to back up here. And we retested at 3 months after I stopped testosterone. I stopped a handful of things.
Okay.
I talk about it all in like one of the episodes on Daddyhood that's out right now.
Okay. Listen to that.
Everything, check it out. Everything that I like did to change that. Tested at the 3 month mark, trending in the right direction. Doctor's like, great, let's get it better.
Okay.
3 months later, 6 months now, I got it to where they wanted to freeze it.
Okay. So 6 months, got to where you wanted to.
Yep.
You're spending about $1,000 or so. Next process is you have to get an egg, right?
Yeah. But so you're doing them all simultaneously because right now where there's a surrogate shortage and like there's a wait list, about a 6 month wait list for surrogates.
6 month wait list.
Yeah.
Interesting. So you do everything at once.
Yeah. We hired a concierge service to help connect us to everybody.
Okay. I got to ask the dollars and cents, dollars, cents and time for the whole package. What does this cost?
For just that donor concierge or for like all in for fertility? Dollar,
like if you Google the average price for a surrogate, it's insane.
Yeah.
It's like a six-figure dollar amount.
Wait, are we talking about like what stage? So just everything that we've done so far?
Yeah, like how, because I'm so lost at the stages and you're telling me you guys did it all at once. Like I know you obviously have to have an egg. There has to be fertilization. Yeah. It then has to be, you have to have a surrogate. Like there's all these stages. Like what are the stages and what are the dollars like that you've had to spend on these stages?
Our baby will be equivalent to a vacation house or two at the end of the day.
Wow.
So it was a lot. And you have to start somewhere. Starting with a fertility lawyer is what I would like to say. So start with your fertility lawyer right after, get the lay of the land, grab an agency. So you have to go through an egg donor. Once you have your egg donor selected, you're still going through, at least we were still going through our surrogate and who that was going to be and what agency we were going through there. And like what people don't realize is like, our doctor that we're using services three people. We are one of his patients,
wow.
But then the egg donor is his patient and the surrogate is his patient. And we are. So he has three patients right off of the bat.
Wow.
And which for the most part, we're responsible for all those bills.
Oh my God. So
and none of our insurance covers it.
All out of pocket. A vacation home or two is a seven-figure dollar amount. Close to.
Yeah. I mean, look, I'm talking about like down payment more. I'm not buying my vacation homes in cash here, Jason. We're mortgaging them.
Okay. But 8% interest.
8%. I mean, yeah, the interest rate's a little high now. I don't know if I would even go for a vacation home, but I would say right around just shy of $500,000.
My gosh.
To go through what we went through.
And how, so we know 6 months for the sperm. How about the other process? How long have you been going through this?
2 years.
2 years.
Yeah.
And what's the most latest update?
Most latest update is that we're waiting for testing to come back from our surrogate to do like all of the transfers. We're doing like mock cycles and making sure everything's like lined up
Yeah.
because we only have three embryos. So we have three shots at this. And okay. I say only in like the most appreciative way.
Of course.
We're blessed to have three embryos.
Yeah.
But you know, I have friends who have 20 in storage, sure. right? And like sure. they have 20 shots.
Yeah.
We on the other hand have three. So okay. it's like, how do we, you know, we have to be a little more strategic and, or we have to go do another egg retrieval and
go through it all again.
Another
half million bucks.
I'm looking around like, when is this going to end?
Before you know it, Colton's like, I'm done with reality TV. He's like, all right, ABC, I'll be the Bachelor again.
Yeah, no shit.
$2 million.
God, Jordan, no, I can't do that to Jordan.
I'm just having fun. Oh, that's good stuff. Well, yeah. Colt, congratulations on everything. Your full circle of life, your growth yeah. as a human, professionally, personally, obviously, financially, soon to be, knock on wood, fingers crossed, a father. It's been 7 years of knowing you, and there's been these highs and lows and lefts and rights. But from the day I met you, I gravitated towards you. I yeah. always learned from you. I'm continuing to learn from you, and I appreciate our friendship. I wish you the best. And it's been so much fun having you on Trading Secrets.
Yeah.
But okay, I got to wrap with a trading secret. So you've had a wild journey. You've learned a lot through your days, and you've done a lot. And yeah. a trading secret is something you can't get in a textbook. You can't get in a YouTube or TikTok tutorial, only from Colton and your experience. So what trading secret can Colton Underwood leave us with?
I would just say the overall arc of this is going to be start somewhere. You have to start. You can't just like have it. And I mean that from even like from as recent as what we were just talking about, my fertility journey. There's other paths to parenthood. I'm speaking from a very privileged place where I have resources to spend to build my family. It's a choice I made, and I'm lucky to have that. And I'm appreciative of having that. There's other options. There's adoption. There's foster. Like you can go through. So we wanted to start somewhere. If you want a family, go down the path of exploring something that is right for you and that you can afford and that you can have. Same with your career. Like if you want to be on TV, start somewhere. Like look up an open casting call, walk in, try to like take your shot yeah. and like, you never know. So just like starting is a big deal. And that's also authentic to my life. Like start somewhere. If you need to come out, start somewhere. If you are trying to be the best version of you, get better. You
know? Yeah. I love it. I love it. You got to start somewhere. If you don't, there's no way to end up where you are. And even through your lessons, you starting somewhere, sometimes it was proactive in your initiative and your competition and your drive. And sometimes like you did with your Netflix show, it's like you forced yourself with other people's push to start somewhere. But at the end of the day, all those things led to a theme of start somewhere. So that's a perfect way to wrap up this episode with Colton Underwood. Colton, I know you have so much going on with your legacy and your podcast and everything else. Where can people find each of those things?
At the Daddyhood Podcast on Instagram, at Colton Underwood, and at Colton's Legacy.
There we go.
Yeah.
We will be following along. Congratulations. And thank you for being on this episode of Trading Secrets.
Here we go.